Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
This is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
It is May of 1959, Hanoi, North Vietnam. A critical meeting among the leadership at the time, the Vietnamese Communist Party and the North Vietnam Army coming together to look to the future, influenced by events in the Cold War. This moment begins the tale of the long reckoning. A new book from George Black, A Story of War, Peace, and Redemption. This is Vietnam. It's a Vietnam War that was not available for those of us old enough to have lived this period as young men, watching it from university, then watching it from the East Coast of the United States during the anti-war movement, then watching it around the edges as the novels came out, as the Hollywood movies responded, as the story was told and retold. But to my knowledge, not told the way George Black has presented. George, a very good evening to you. Congratulations. May of 1959. Gathered together is Ho Chi Minh, the inspiring figure of the Vietnamese Communist Party, Vinh Nguyen Giep, the general responsible or given credit for or generally accredited with the victory at Dien Bien Phu over the French colonial masters in the early 1950s, who lived toward the age of 102. Dying in 2013. But most importantly, you reveal information that was perhaps available at the time, but I don't remember hearing this, George. A man named Lê Dzon, head of the Vietnamese Communist Party in a rigorous and ideological fashion, and the general in charge of the army, Nguyen Chi Pen. Their identification now of the war going forward. What was the contest? What was the debate? And what was the decision? Good evening to you, George.
Good evening, John. It's very nice to be with you, and thank you for the opportunity to talk. 1959, yes, major moment in history for many, many different reasons. I would say the biggest of those reasons is the Sino-Soviet split. And really I would say, even backtracking a little bit before 59, a series of misunderstandings by the United States that were born of events in the immediate post-World War II period, and I would single out a couple. One would be the McCarthy era and the removal of basically all of the China experts in the State Department, which gave rise to this illusion that the communist world was a great monolith and had a common purpose, common strategies. They missed the significance of the Sino-Soviet split because they didn't understand China. Even before that, immediately post-World War II, you had a wave of decolonization throughout the world. And it was generally accepted that this was an unstoppable force. The British were getting out of India. And the U.S. at that point was faced with a choice. They could either say to the French, look, this is a force that's happening everywhere. It's an inevitable move of history after the war. Or they could say, we're so sorry for the French, our loyal allies. They were overrun by the Nazis. We'll throw them a bone, which is, you know, not make a fuss about them keeping their colonies. And then once the French began to fight to keep Southeast Asia, the United States then came in with military aid to the French to the point where they were giving 80% of what France needed to fight the war. So that's the backdrop to 59. And then you get Cuba. And you get a debate between the Soviet Union and China about the pace at which the revolutions in the world should proceed, with the Soviets being much more cautious, much more about consolidating victories, the Chinese being much more adventurous, And the split begins in Vietnam. And I think one of the great illusions about the war, and I would say if there's a single symbol of how badly it was misunderstood, General Westmoreland, who commanded American forces in Vietnam, wrote a 400-page autobiography, memoir. And there is not one single mention in 400 pages of the man who was actually running the Vietnamese war effort, Le Duan, the Secretary General of the Vietnamese Workers' Party, later the Communist Party, which is like Sun Tzu's first law of war is know your enemy. And I don't think there was ever an appreciation really of who the enemy was, why they were fighting, what motivated their struggle. And, you know, they were Marxist-Leninists, and Le Duan was particularly hardline. But the dominant feature was it was a struggle for national independence. And it was an extremely militant and very uncompromising struggle for national independence. And Marxism was a tool they used, and a philosophy that they believed in to varying degrees. But then when the Cuban Revolution happened in January of 59, it vindicated a lot of what Le Duan was arguing for. He was basically saying the South has been abandoned since the country was partitioned in 1954 by the Geneva Peace Agreements. And the Southern revolutionaries are being thrown to the wolves. The United States are backing a very hardline military regime. He had actually grown up himself in the area immediately below the demilitarized zone, which is where a lot of the long reckoning is set, in the province of Quang Tri. And he had been a commander of Southern forces, and he saw them being abandoned. And he said, look, the Americans are likely to come in at some point. We should hit the Southern army while it's still weak. And during that period from 59 through to 63, he saw the first big defeats of the South Vietnamese army by the Viet Cong in 1963 as a sort of vindication of what he was saying. The Americans are not there. We've got to preempt it. And Ho Chi Minh and General Giap, the mastermind of the victory at Dien Bien Phu, were saying, no, we don't want to provoke an intervention by the Americans. We're too weak. We're still recovering from the French war. So that was the essence of the split. And it's sometimes described as, you know, Le Duan was pro-Chinese and Ho Chi Minh was pro-Soviet. It's not quite that simple, because the reality of how they conducted the war was that they managed to get aid from both of the communist powers without ever sacrificing their independence of how they defined the strategy. They were brilliant at playing the two superpowers off against each other or keeping both happy at the same time and avoiding taking sides. And I think that's a big part of why they won.
The tool that the Hanoi decision makers launch is the Ho Chi Minh Trail.
Yeah.
Which you've described as a ladder starting in North Vietnam, coming through Laos, and then entering into Vietnam in what is essentially I Corps, which is where all the killing was, the killing zone of I Corps, from the DMZ to Da Nang.
Yeah.
That construction was artfully done and overwhelmingly successful. At the time, did the Americans know that this was being built before the decision was to deploy the Marines in 65? Did they know about the Ho Chi Minh Trail in that period between 59 and 65?
Yes, they did. It was very, very rudimentary in the early days. And the idea in the first place was to cross the demilitarized zone, to come in from the north into the south directly. Now, the demilitarized zone happened to be at the very, very narrowest point of this long, skinny country. It's only about 35 miles wide from the Lao border to the ocean at that point, which meant it was very particularly easy for the French to defend. And one of the great disputes in the Geneva talks in 1954 is where the boundary line should be drawn. And in the end, in part because the Soviets pressed Ho Chi Minh to be more conciliatory, he wanted the line to be drawn much farther south, which would have given the North control of the city of Da Nang with its seaport and the only east-west highway that cut across the country. which became very famous to the Marines who fought there, Route 9. It ran parallel and immediately south of the DMZ. But the settlement at Geneva gave the South control of that, and it meant that the French and then the South Vietnamese government of the Republic of Vietnam, it was a much easier place to defend. They could station troops and patrols along Route 9. They had a fairly narrow band of territory to defend. So in 62, and this was again really Le Xuan's idea, they were supporting, the North was supporting the communist Pathet Lao on the Lao side of the border. And they took a strategic part of the Lao portion of that road, Route 9, in 1961. And after that, Le Xuan said, we've got to drive this trail down through Laos and then find infiltration points through the very high mountains that separate the two countries, the Trung Thong Mountains.
The book is The Long Reckoning. George Black is the author, a story of war, peace, and redemption in Vietnam. When we come back, it is 1965, and Lyndon Baines Johnson's in the White House making decisions about the war in Vietnam. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Madison.